Digital Rebellion is the name of a new book, subtitled The Birth of the Cyber Left by Todd Wolfson. Todd Wolfson's a sociocultural anthropologist, an assistant professor of journalism and media studies at Rutgers University, and a community organizer who co-founded the Media Mobilizing Project in Philadelphia. And the text is very relevant to the work of so many people here at WBAI and community radio practitioners for decades, but obviously focusing on a new trajectory, if you will, stemming really from the 1990s, but looking at some recent rebellions. Todd Wolfson, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for joining us this morning.
It is great to be here, an honor. Thank you, Mario.
It's good to have you. You know, I should point out that John Tarleton from The Independent gave me this book. The other day we had a meeting in the Commons in Brooklyn, and he gave me the book, and I started reading. I said, this is right up our alley here at WBAI, so I wanted to get you on right away, but hopefully we'll continue this conversation in future programs here on WBAI, because there's a lot in it. Tell us about this idea, the birth of the cyber left. It sounds like you're focusing on kind of a technological movement, but that's not necessarily the case. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the birth of the cyber left is basically the cyber left is a term I used to pull together all the fragments of strategy and practice that we see in contemporary activism and organizing, and particularly in the social movement left, and pull them into a coherent logic of modern activism. So in particular, the cyber left is supposed to play, as you can guess, a historical and comparative function, helping us think about how contemporary activists are practicing in relationship to previous periods, and in this particular way I'm thinking about the old left and the new left across at least U.S.-based activism and organizing. So cyber left aims to kind of like really characterize how activists are operating. And yes, it is in relationship to technological transformations and, importantly, larger transformations in how capitalism operates.
You focus obviously a lot on indie media, and we'll talk about that in a second, but you go even further back to the Zapatistas as kind of the origins. Could you talk a little bit about why you chose that moment as opposed to perhaps even going further back, looking at the origins of, for example, the media reform movement and the Pacifica Foundation and the Pacifica Radio Network, which in many ways had many of the objectives, many of the even discourse, the same discourse that we heard from the indie media activists in the 1990s.
Absolutely. There are so many tributaries that led to this kind of the founding of indie media and then a lot of these logics that I try to do some accounting for it, but obviously there's so many strands you can't pick up. But the reason I pick the Zapatistas as the main focal like origin point is because historically in my research, it's really where many of the founders of indie media point. Particular, so, I mean, the Zapatistas, and I'm sure all your listeners know, they emerged, they rose up on January 1st, the first day of the North American Free Trade Agreement went into effect, because they felt like this quote-unquote free trade agreement was going to be a death knell to their way of life. They were in a struggle with the Mexican state. This is at the same time that the internet is really becoming, you know, it's being more entwined with our everyday life. And so in their struggle with the Mexican state, they start retreating into the mountains of Chiapas, and the Mexican state pursues them. But it's in that moment that the Zapatistas and yes, their spokesperson, Subcomandante Marcos, but the Zapatistas writ large, use the internet in very, very clever ways, both not only the internet radio, they put out communiques, their supporters tap into already existing networks on the internet, and they were able to stop the counterattack by the Mexican state and ultimately win some peace accords that the state went back on and also win some autonomy over their lands. Mm-hmm. But it's the way they used the internet and then how they made certain calls post that struggle for creating a global network of communications that really struck a chord with, right, I would say, New York and Canadian activists at first.
Right, and they made it visible on a global scale. I mean, you know, I write about in some of the work I've done in Colombia, how the indigenous movements in Colombia with an armed insurrection that emerged in the late 70s into the early 80s had the same the same proclamations and denunciations that the Zapatistas had in the 1990s, but they didn't have they had their individual community media channels, really, but for local consumption, not for external communication. And that, in many ways, is why the Zapatistas were so innovative, because they recognized the need to make themselves visible on a global scale. We're speaking with Todd Wolfson, the author of Digital Rebellion, The Birth of the Cyber Left. My name is Mario Murillo here on The Morning Show, along with Jed Brand. Jed, you wanted to pipe in.
Oh, yeah.
I know you have a lot of experience on the indie media stuff.
Oh, yeah. I worked at New York City Indie Media for many years, both on the website and the publication. And I'm really excited to read your book. Well, how would you describe how indie media developed, right, just as opposed to having a, we'll call it an activist orientation or an anti-authoritarian orientation? What was the formal distinction of how this international network developed coming out of those Zapatista calls?
Yeah, it's a great question. And actually, there's a very strong New York history to this. So both there's a really strong New York City independent media center that develops later, and obviously the independent after that. But in 1997, there was a conference that I think folks primarily from Deep Dish TV and Paper Tiger pulled together, and others, so Dee Dee Hallock and others pulled together, called Free the Media. And it was a conference to think about what it was in the summer of 97, and it was a conference to think about ways to build activist media around the country. I think there was Canadian activists there as well. And Dee Dee Hallock and I think Greg Ruggiero, others, mm-hmm. had this idea of having Subcomandante Marcos do a video plenary. And so obviously he didn't come up to New York, but the plenary of the conference came from Marcos. It's now a video that's gone pretty viral. And he makes this call in 97 to a bunch of New York activists, many of them who were the founders of Seattle Independent Media Center in 1999, to create this global network of communications as a critical part of a global struggle against neoliberalism.
What are the things about indie media that seems almost routine now was that it was an open publishing site that happened mm-hmm, before absolutely. The proliferation of blogging. Mm-hmm. So each locale, even starting with the Seattle Independent Media Center, you could just go on from New York or from Europe or Australia, wherever, and post onto that site, both commentary, video, photos. And people had just never seen anything like that before. And it seemed like indie media really created both a brand and a network that enabled the creation of a community of discussion that had been already excluded from all the mainstream media sources. Whereas in the 80s and 90s, people were always trying to complain about getting on TV. Mm-hmm. And then you get on TV and you wouldn't be able to recognize what you'd done.
Or getting on WBAI and Pacific, I remember. I mean, the idea, the closed barriers, they were, you know, as much as community radio was supposed to be an open access, you know, community space, there was always perceived barriers that existed that indie media kind of transformed or confronted in many ways or supplemented. Thoughts about that, Todd?
Yeah, I think that's precisely what made it so exciting and grow so quickly. One of the programmers of that open publishing software said it was like opening this huge flower and watching it blossom. So when they created that open publishing software, first in Seattle and then it went everywhere, you saw, I mean, the Seattle Independent Media Center was the first independent media center that developed during the WTO protests in Seattle in 99. And it started during the protests. It got a million hits in the first week, more than CNN at the time, and had thousands of postings. It was like people rushed to it, and it became this nerve center for the struggles on the streets in Seattle like we'd never seen before. So I think, Jed, what you're putting out is exactly right. People got so excited by the opportunity to talk about what was happening in the streets in Seattle, and then the larger idea just went, you know, it hit a tipping point, to use an unfortunate term. It hit a tipping point, and indie media's developed over the next 3-4 years. You know, there was like one, I think there was a new independent media center developing in a new city every 7 days from like 1999 right. to 2000.
It's just an amazing story that people who have not studied should really check out your book, Digital Rebellion. That's by Todd
Wolfson. Todd Wolfson, and the subtitle is The Birth of the Cyber Left. We're just skimming the surface, I know, because I want to get you back on.
I have a question. Indie media also, in a lot of ways, has run a cycle, right? Like it went through a period, it exploded, it went internationally. And then we've seen in the intermediary time the rise of what we now call social media. And it seems like indie media was social media before there was a name for it. But now that Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, that these services are out there, how do you think this, what you're calling cyber left, interfaces with what are essentially owned media properties?
Yeah, it's another fantastic question. I think that indie media did prefigure all the things we see, from the what first happened, which was a citizen journalism and blogging explosion, to the social media, Facebook, Twitter explosion. I think much of this might have happened in either case, but indie media was the first experiment with it, clearly, that was of this at this scale. And one of the programmers who was involved in developing indie media software also became one of the programmers involved in the early stages of Twitter. So there are direct connections also to these more corporatized.
Which code was that? SF Active?
Which coder? Yeah, Active. Yeah. And he was actually a programmer who was involved in developing indie medias across the world, and I think in South America quite a bit. But, I think it does prefigure all of those things. But I think when you look at protests today, when you look at the development of the Black Lives Matter
movement,
you know, they're using Twitter much more, and Facebook is a much more what's being used. So indie media has run its cycle, but it wasn't able to keep up with the corporate replications of its model.
Right. And, you know, again, we've unfortunately run out of time, but this is something I want to bring you back very soon to talk about this more, because I think if indie media has run its course, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, and maybe you can just address it briefly right now, is has community radio run its course, particularly in big urban areas? My contention is it has not, but when we were covering this big manifestation that took place on I guess it was the 13th of December, Washington Square Park,
the Millions March
that brought 70 to 100,000 people on the streets of New York, which I heard about through Facebook, and that I would imagine most of the people there did not hear about it on WBAI or through WBAI, which in the past, back in the 1990s and before that, in the 80s and elsewhere, you know, BAI was considered a central point of all these, mobilizations. So has community radio, in what we used to know as kind of the central point of organizers and mass protests and movement protests, if we can call it that, run its course?
No. And indie media would not have run its course if it had built stronger local connections. I think that community radio
that
is grounded in communities is always going to be a critical instrument for telling stories, sharing stories, understanding information. Indie media, and this isn't every indie media, but many of the local indie media has lost their way. They put technology
right
in front of community organizing and community relationships.
Face-to-face and relationships. And
well, somebody said politics is real human relationships, mm-hmm, not just what we think about each other.
Yeah, and technology needs to be an accelerant of already existing organizing and community that's
right
around. It can't mask that work not happening.
Right.
Community radio, when it's working its best, is grounded in community.
Absolutely, Todd. I appreciate you saying that. I will certainly welcome you back. Maybe when you're in New York, we can bring you into the studio and we can have a longer conversation. In fact, bring some of the veteran, including, of course, Jed here, but others who've been involved with that. Dee Dee Hollick, good friend of mine and a good friend of ours here at WBI.
And a hero.
And a hero, definitely. So maybe we'll have a longer conversation in the coming weeks about this. But I really appreciate your effort. I'm halfway through it. Digital Rebellion, The Birth of the Cyber Left, Todd Wolfson. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll definitely be in touch.
Thanks for having me today.